Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
This is Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Alice Wolfley. Today we'll hear from Captain Rainbow, who has lived in Anderson Valley for more than 40 years. He was part of the earliest wave of hippies to move here in the late 60s. These days, he's best known as the Master of Ceremonies at the Anderson Valley Variety Show, an annual celebration of local community. He lives near Boonville in a house he built out of lumber from his land.
Before coming here, I was dreaming about it and reading the, Mother Earth news and the Whole Earth catalog was definitely an inspiration. And I was born in Chesterfield, Missouri in 1951. I grew up on actually the largest black caracal sheep ranch east of New Mexico, just outside of St. Louis in this little town called Chesterfield. My dad died when I was 6 years old. When I was 10, we moved back east to where my mother had grown up, and we moved in the same town where my grandparents, her parents lived. It's a very white, a wealthy suburb, just outside of Boston. I ended up going to a prep school in Cambridge, right next to Harvard, and I wore a tie and a blazer, and I knew this is not my scene from the get-go. No. I didn't fit. I didn't fit. I didn't do well in the school either. I was not a success. All these guys were headed for Ivy League schools. That's what you did. And they went on to become titans of industry and this and that. And I felt a different calling. After being a failure at this prep school, I'd gotten very involved in the Unitarian Youth Group. And they had these conferences, and I was on the conference committee, the Continental Conference Committee. And I ended up after this conference in Seattle, and there was some pals there, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was out there, and these guys said, "Hey, I got an apartment in San Francisco. You can crash on the floor." And this is 1969. And I'm going, "Oh, yeah, that sounds good." Here I am in San Francisco, 1969. Kind of missed the summer of love by a couple years. And already the hate was kind of, there were good things, but there were some bad things coming in too. So I actually signed up for Mission High School, the night school there. And I actually graduated from Mission High School, and I was valedictorian of the graduating class, going to school 4 nights a week, getting straight A's, stoned almost every night. And so then I went to San Francisco State for just one semester. It was a huge school, and they were having riots all the time. And I was kind of, I might have been to some political demonstrations and thrown a few rocks, but I wasn't out there on the front lines, you know. I was more of a peace-love hippie. As a kid, I had always camped out and loved the mountains and the woods and had a kind of idea of that's where I wanted to be. I really didn't want to be in the middle of a city. Well, I'd already lived in Washington State in the country for a couple years, and we had had gardens and chickens and goats and this and that. So I was coming here after we had picked a bunch of apples in eastern Washington from a broken-up love affair. And I had my little 1946 Dodge pickup truck with the crank-up windshield and a little camper I'd built on the back. And I didn't have any idea of what I was doing or where I was going. And my little heart was broken and just headed south. Now it's 40 years later, 40-something years later. The community here was scary if you were a long hair. When I first came here, we were kind of pretty much the first wave of hippies to show up in the valley. And besides not having any money and rarely had vehicles that ran, no electricity or no telephone, we hung out a lot up in the woods, and we rarely came to town. Town seemed like a long way away. And when you went to town, it wasn't too friendly. Like, I didn't go in the bar for 10 years. You'd get a chainsaw haircut, most likely, if you went down there. So we felt like we were outlaws from the culture. And we did our own deal up there. We were searching. We were trying to find out some new way to operate. Our parents went through the Depression, World War II. They really saw it rough, and they worked so that their kids could have a better life. I mean, this is the American dream. Well, we got it in the 50s. Here it was. You have your own little house. Daddy's working. Mama's home. You mow the lawn. You get your crew cut. We found that to be false. There was no heart, no spirit.
This is Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We're hearing from Captain Rainbow, who lives near Boonville.
Being a hippie was when I felt discriminated against. I got the slurs, I got pushed around. It made me a lot more sympathetic to folks who didn't have all the privilege that I did. I got a couple good examples of finding common ground with people in the valley that coming here feeling just like an outlaw hiding in the bushes, kind of wary, and people there, you know, wary of us. We were different. The original Grange was built in 1939, and the same site where the Grange is now. It had a great fir dance floor and a big old barrel stove to heat the place in the winter and a little stage. And it was the place to have a party if you want to have a dance party. But the Grangers ran it. We were hippies. And then it burned down. We kind of got organized, and a bunch of us had came up with some plans and drawings, and we presented this thing. You know, we said, hey, how about a wooden dance floor, a stage, so that there can be events in the valley? Wouldn't this be a great idea? And not too long afterwards, they got in touch and said, well, okay, but we run out of money, you all have to volunteer to help rebuild the place. And we went, oh, sure, sure, no problem. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it turns out that they didn't have hardly any insurance. It took us 5 years to rebuild that building because we had no money. And you'd be hungover, and it'd be every weekend almost, Saturday, sometimes Sunday, and you'd show up. And there'd be maybe the guy you saw at the bar last night, some redneck guy who almost beat you up. But there you'd be hanging sheetrock with this guy. Because we didn't have any money. Because we needed each other. Because we shared this common experience of something that both groups wanted to happen. It happened. And for me anyway, it was a huge opening of the community. Another example of the early days when there was kind of this the hippie and redneck situation, or locals and hippie situation, was there used to be the Albion People's Fair, which was, that was just it. That was like the maximum super duper hippy dippy on the coast. Wild, terrific crafts, music, drama, party for a few days. I was ready to go. Here we are in the morning, and I'm going down alone in my old 49 Chevy pickup, and I've got my feathers in my hair, little braids, and it's long and hanging out. And I had this kind of my party hippie tunic. And these boots that came up just below my knee with the fringe and the beading on it. And, oh, man, I was to the nines, as they say in hippiedom. I mean, this was... And I was just headed out to Albion and wasn't planning on stopping. But I come down to Boonville, and I have a flat tire. There's Jeff at the gas station. Jeff Short, a storied guy around here. And he'd hold court And I pull in there and I kind of, and I look at myself and I'm going, oh my God, this could be really bad. Because he's there with his buddies and they're pretty oiled up already. And I went, well, what the hell? And I had some cheap cigar that I was saving for later. And I lit that thing and grabbed the tire out and rolled it up to him and said, hey boys, how are you? Can you fix this thing in a hurry? I got a party to go to. And they were just, they looked at me and they're like, just so, whoa. Yeah. And he fixed the tire and I went lickety split. I was out of there. And I think afterwards they were scratching their heads. Something really weird happened. But just being super outrageous, over the top, but not threatening, worked pretty good that time. Just by being so visible, you can become invisible. It's mm-hmm. kind of like a magic trick where you're distracting the attention. There was an old guy around here called Adrian Newton. And we called him the Redwood Guru. And he was this old guy, retired, who lived in a little shack down in Boonville. He had logged all his life. He became, to me, like a father figure. I had never had a real father figure. And here was an old guy who, his legs were going bad, and he needed to make a little money. And he was making split stuff in the creeks around here from what was left over. I wasn't too good of a worker, but... you know, he said, God damn it, Rainbow. You make this trail down here, but you won't cut out that one little bush you're tripping over every time. I said, well, Adrian, it's a bush. It's a growing thing. I said, God damn it, Abe. You're going to kill yourself on that. There'd be more bushes. And I began to gain an appreciation for working in the woods by being with this guy. He wasn't exactly an ecologist, but... he was a practical man who wasn't into trashing the woods, and he knew what he was doing. He taught me how to do stuff. And I just remember lines of his, like, he told me about how his dad built a house in Compshie. His dad, this is probably the 1890s, he built a house with 5 bedrooms in 3 months alone. And he built all the doors and window frames and everything. And I'm going, Adrian, nobody can do that. Because I had been working as a builder for a while. And he looked at me and he said, Rainbow, I don't think you know how people used to work. And I think he was right. I can pretend that, you know, I did some work in my day. But compared to those guys...
This is Promise of Paradise, back to the land oral histories of Mendocino County. We're hearing from Captain Rainbow, who lives near Boonville.
And up here, we were living up in the bushes and living off almost no money at all. And one way we survived was that we'd go over and pick fruit in the Sacramento Valley. And we had our connections where we had a truck that usually we could get on the road. And there'd be sometimes 4 or 5, 6, 8, even 10 of us would go over and... we had a place that we could stay, or a few places we could stay. Over there in the Sacramento Valley, they let us camp. We'd bring our teepee. We'd bring a goat for milk in the morning. Tootie the goat, I remember. She was great. And we'd bring our drums and our guitars. And we'd just camp out there and pick fruit. They liked us, not because we were good pickers or fruit workers. We were really, really slow. But we were honest, and we didn't want any money. We just wanted to trade fruit. And we didn't care. We're out there chanting, la, 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 la. We're picking the fruit. And we'd trade for the fruit. And we would dry then hundreds of pounds, actually, in a season of cherries and apricots, peaches, plums. And we'd bring it back, and we'd can it. One thing I have to say is us hippies... lived off the excess of the rest of the culture. There was so much stuff. We were dumpster divers. We were experts at it. And we knew the right dumpsters to dive into, too. If there wasn't that excess from the straight culture, we couldn't have survived. We might not have existed.
Captain Rainbow is not the name his parents gave him at birth. It was given to him years later on a memorable afternoon in the Berkeley Hills.
Late 60s or very early 70s. I think late 60s. It was the first day of spring. We're up there on Grizzly Peak in Tilden Park, where you can look down, you see the whole Bay Area, and it's this gorgeous, sunny spring day. And it's these green, green grass hillsides tumbling down and big rocks going down, and the whole Bay Area is spread out in front of you. And we're flying on mescaline. It's just so wonderful, and I don't know if you know the feeling, maybe you do, but where you feel it's a very sensual feeling, and I'm kind of rolling around on the ground, just feeling the earth and, you know, feeling one with the earth and everything. And I look up and I'm by this big smooth rock, and there's millions of tiny rainbows going back and forth across this rock as I writhe back and forth, and I'm looking at it. And I go, whoa, what a beautiful hallucination I'm having. And then I look, and there's this guy over next to me writhing on the ground too. And he's looking at the rock, and I realize without a word that he's seeing the same hallucination. And I'm going, oh, it's a group hallucination. How cosmic can this be? And we're looking, and finally, after it seemed like hours, we realize that I'm wearing a bracelet with rhinestones on it, and every time I would, the past tense of writhed, be rothed, every time I rothed, it would make these tiny rainbows across the thing, and I'm bummed out. I thought this was this big cosmic experience, and here I got this damn bracelet. Oh, geez. But the guy, he's still there, man. He goes, oh, don't worry, man. You're the rainbow maker. So, I don't know. The guy gave it to me. So I figured, well, I'll take that. Okay, I'll go with that. And that same day, actually, we decide that we're going to run down the mountainside and run home, which was way down near the bay somewhere. And we had no concept that this was miles and miles away. But it's right there. And, oh, this will be so beautiful. And we're running and we're leaping down these things. It was just so sensual and marvelous. Just gorgeous day. And we get down into this little valley. And there's a brook bubbling through it. And these gorgeous trees. And then this guy's talking. He's saying, oh, man. It's like the Garden of Eden where we are. And we're going, yeah, whoa. And this voice, this amplified voice comes over out of the sky, it seems like, and it says, the garden will be closing now. The garden will be closing. And we go, no, no. Finally, of course, we realized we had found our way into the botanical garden. Yeah, no, in a way, it's all smoke and mirrors, but I'll go for it. I'll let the mystery be, and fine, you know, I'm good for that. We are stars, we are daughters. Take acid and you see in a whole different way this whole description of the world that you got growing up. Ha! That's only a description, and it's only one. You take a psychedelic and you go, oh, wait a minute. There's many more descriptions of the world. Wow, it's not just this one way. It opens up your head. And I do think that psychedelics played quite a part in that. I do have to say that it was a luxury to be able to do that most people couldn't afford. I really didn't expect, you know, I couldn't expect these loggers to take acid and start throwing flower petals around. And I do think that where this came from, it was made possible by the affluence of the 50s after World War II and the American dream. Earlier on, it felt like there was this wave, this rising wave of all of us. With Vietnam and the destruction of the environment and all these things that were happening in the 60s, there was this rising wave of people going, hey, there's another way. We don't have to go down this road. We don't have to do this. And people searching for answers. And some people went in a spiritual direction. Some people went in a political direction. And I think the back to the land thing kind of combined both of those and yet was kind of a third way to move, to go, to be. And I liked the idea of, instead of being against something, being for something. 40 years ago, we were talking about ecology and human rights and love and peace, you know, and I'm telling you, it was the right stuff. We didn't know what we were doing, and we've lost a lot of people on the way. But it's funny to see some of the stuff coming around now. It's just the timing was wrong, you know, for the culture to accept that. But God damn it, them hippies was right. A lot of stuff that was popular back then was right on. The ideal is gone. The dream is over. We were going to change the world. We were going to save it. And yet, it doesn't have to go on forever. It doesn't have to be, you know, the cornerstone of our whole society. I still remain idealistic, probably stupidly, but I don't care because it feels better. In some ways, things have changed to become part of our culture, the larger culture, in ways that we all never expected back then. But I think a lot has been lost. And you asked a question before about, what do you think about all these things that you have now? And I got a lot of stuff. I have 3 trucks. Ridiculous. Absurd. 2 motorcycles that don't run. A car. Look at all this stuff. And all this stuff, I can say, you know, I built this house with my hands. I did this. I, you know, I'm not a consumer. I, you know, did this. I made the money. Whatever. But it's all from the place of privilege. And I think that needs to be acknowledged. My partner is somebody who's done this work overseas for years and years and really rough places, and she comes back here and she says that you have created this little paradise here, and it really is. This is La La Land, and it's hard to square yourself with it. Are you gonna go, oh, that's all false then? Well, hey, it's what the cards I got dealt. And I think I tried to do the right thing with the cards I got. Get on with it, but try to hang on to what principles you have.
Well, then can I walk beside you? I have come here to lose the smog. And I feel to be a cog in something turning. The time. of man I don't know who I am, but you know life is for learning. We are stardust, we are golden, and we got to get ourselves back to the garden. By the time we got to Woodstock, we were 500,000 strong, and everywhere there was song and a celebration. And I dreamed I saw the bombers riding shotgun in the sky, and they were turning in to butterflies above our nation. We are stardust, billion-year-old carbon. We are gold.
You've been listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Alice Wolfley. We've been hearing from Captain Rainbow, who lives near Boonville. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, Story Center, and the Grace Hudson Museum.